Blog Talk Radio.
Why, hello, all you freaks out there. This is Ryan, and welcome to the freaking awesome show. Hope everyone had a good weekend, enjoyed themselves. We had a pretty fun weekend here, and for the life of me, I can't remember what we did. I really don't think we did anything too exciting this weekend. It was a good... It was a nice, relaxing weekend here at the freaking awesome household. Angie has started a new job today, so she is sleeping right now with RJ. So I am pulling this out on my own. Today is a very special episode. We started the freaking awesome paranormal show on January 13th, 2014. And we are still going strong 6 years later. And I'm very humbled and very, just very, like, almost shocked that we've lasted this long. When I first started the show, I remember I got a message from, I think it might have been from Howie or Dennis, telling me that they're asking if I knew anyone who wanted to take their time slot. Matt Mizerak and Dennis Esluck had the same radio show but on different nights, Mondays and Wednesday nights. And their shows would last like 3 hours at a time. And they were getting burned out. So they opened up a 2 hour time slot on Monday nights. And I volunteered for it. Of course, it's one of those deals where it's like, I'll do it, but not really thinking about what it meant or what I would have to do. Because if anyone knows me, I'm not really an extroverted person. Unless I feel really comfortable, then I can open up more. But for the most part, I'm not a very talkative person. And when I do talk, I talk too fast sometimes, and people, because I get excited, and sometimes my words come out faster than my mind can think. So it kind of all hit me at the beginning. I'm like, oh shit, what am I gonna do? I don't even know what I need to do to even host this show. But luckily, I had some really good co-hosts who helped me out a lot with my at the beginning. And before I take a drink of my Taco Bell Baja Blast, which is kind of watered down now, but I had a great co-host to help me out, and a great guest, and that definitely helps a lot too. And 6 years later, we're still going. So I managed to find guests who want to come on the show and talk to me. And so I'm very, like I said, I'm very happy that we've been able to last this long. And I have no intention of stopping anytime soon. But anyways, back to, got all the mushy stuff out of the way. Not yet. I'm going to take time on the show before we get Sean on to give some shout outs to people who definitely helped the show out, helped me to, help the show to last this long. And I put a post on Facebook, but I actually want to, do it on the show as well. I want to thank Holly Mullins for coming on and co-hosting with me for 2 years, Amber Nicole Keeney for being our first real co-host, Steve Dills, Rhonda Montgomery. Got to thank Kristen Wolfe for helping me out with the show, Allie Braswell for helping to book guests, Howie O'Dell. He was an integral part of the show at the very beginning. He had some great advice for me. Of course, I got to thank Dennis and Matt for giving me the time slot and being so supportive. I want to thank Amanda and Celestial for coming on and being my co-hosts. I asked them out of nowhere to be co-hosts, and they did a great job. They had no experience, and they kind of took to it like a fish to water. Their questions were very insightful. And, of course, Angie, she is just an amazing co-host. Her knowledge and the questions she asks are, amazing. So I'm definitely lucky to have her when she's available to come on. But, yeah, that's about it. Of course, I want to thank all the guests who have come on the show and taken the time out of their busy days, busy schedules to come talk to me on the show. And I want to thank, of course, I want to thank Cover or my audience. I know there are a ton of podcasts that you can listen to. It doesn't take much to make a podcast these days. So for those of you who have tuned in to any of my shows, I very much appreciate you taking the time to listen to me talk. It really means a lot to me. And Angie and all my other co-hosts as well. So again, thank you very much, everyone, very much. Thank everyone from the Vibe Network very much for joining me on this crazy, crazy paranormal journey. And like I said, we're just going to keep getting stronger and stronger. So, all right, well, I got that stuff out the way, the mushy, gushy stuff out the way. I am going to talk to my guests, I think. I think that's what people want to hear. People don't want to hear mushy, gushy stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and put him on the line here right now. Hey, brother, what's going on, man?
What's going on?
Not much, man. You know, 6 years, I had to, like, throw a few shout-outs to people, give them their props for, you know, making the show sound good for 6 years, because sure as hell isn't me. That's for damn sure.
Have you? I hear you there. I used to do a Blog Talk Radio show myself for a year or two.
Yeah, which show was that?
The last one I did was called The Darker Side of the Paranormal. It's like, it was like within,
okay,
like the first couple of years I started investigating the paranormal. It was great. It was really positive experience because you can bring all these people, mm-hmm, onto the show that have had, you know, crazy paranormal experiences, and you can synergistically share those experiences and learn from each other. And it was really an awesome learning experience in many, many ways for me to become more knowledgeable about what the things that can happen and get a firsthand, you know, piece of what people went through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the main reason why I like doing this show, is to have people on like yourself or different like teams from all around the country, give them a chance to talk about what they do, you know, kind of where they investigate, some of the evidence they've caught, and like you said, learn from them and give them some support to help them get the word out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's been fun. So I like to learn. We met at the cabin, but I don't know much about how you got started. So I'm going to try to just kind of dive into like how you got started and some of your paranormal experiences, just, you know, stuff like that, if you do not mind tonight.
Of course.
Perfect.
Sure.
So again, so how did you become interested in the paranormal? Was it like, when you were a kid, you were always like ghost books and stuff, or was it like more later on in life?
Well, I was definitely an avid horror movie fan. I was reading Stephen King books like in fourth grade. You know, I love the stories of scary things, and not until like my 20s when I started watching, you know, when A Haunting came out. You know, I remember the first documentary was A Haunting, Connecticut, which was, you know, a Warren Zaffis case. You know, I know that spurred off the Haunting series, and I really loved watching that because, again, you get to witness all these people and these amazing, unimaginable stories and experiences these people went through. And I really believed a lot of these people, what they were, you know, going through went from a paranormal perspective. And I wondered about it, but not until a little bit later. You know, I had a friend of mine who's a big, huge skeptic. I took him to a local cemetery that had a Laura, three women in white that would chase you out. And I wanted him to have an experience. I believed in it, but I never had any paranormal experiences. But there were things that I looked back on later on, years down the road, as I got so deep involved with the paranormal, that I wondered about some instances and little weird things that happened. Yeah, during that night, and I'll never forget that defining moment for me. I was in front of this little girl's grave. Her name was Jenny. And I had a flip phone, and I recorded audio for men. It was crap audio, and obviously better for EVPs because you have more white noise to accentuate, you know, the louder disembodied voice to hear back. But I recorded a couple times, and I thought I heard something with my own ear in front of this little girl's grave, asking if she was there. Recorded a few times, and my friends laughing, you know, the entire time we're walking around. But not until the next evening, I actually went back and listened to the recording when I heard a little girl respond to me. I'm like saying my two toys died in a very creepy, unsettling fashion. And I just got total body chills, and I was just like terrified but exhilarated at the same time. And I listened to a couple more EVPs, and you started to hear, you know, someone say muerto, which means death in Spanish, and just like people just, you know, responding all over the place. And I was just like, wow, oh my God, this is real. And that drew me out to go back out and go on the search for that next tier of experience. So I had a friend of mine that was a little interested in as well with me. So I started going to local cemeteries with him and going out recording EVPs. And I'd think about specific questions to get specific answers. And we'd think up things like, what was the president that was in office? Truman or Kennedy, what was the month of your birthday, October, whatever you can think of to just like have them have an intelligent response back and forth that would just go nuts. And actually, 2 to 3 weeks after I had that first EVP of that little girl, I was in my old apartment and it was light out. And I saw a shadow of a little girl in the corner of my bedroom. And obviously I yelped like a dying seal. And it poof disappeared before my eyes. Things just started to happen to me pretty quickly. I do believe once I started to gauge the spiritual realm, some of my spiritual awakening and my discernment, my medium ability started to come about as well. I'm having premonitions and things like that. But that's really how it began for me. And it just started to increase from there, leading me to have like a podcast and meeting a bunch of people in the paranormal field that have been a part of Crazy Cases, and also led me to meet Ralph Sarchi, who ended up being my mentor when it comes to demonology.
So were you having premonitions or like anything before you started investigating, or was this, did this all come on after you started investigating?
Well, once I got really deeply involved, I thought about there was instances when I was younger. I used to dream about people's faces that I've never met. But now that I have medium abilities, I'm still learning about, because I've only known about my abilities now for 8 or 9 years or something like that. I used to have visions of people's faces. And now that I look back, I think it was little hints of my medium abilities that was there. It was dormant. But once I actually opened myself up to that world and really started delving deep into it, did it started to reciprocate within me and trigger a response to take my spiritual awakening to the next level, and where I really become like an antenna to picking up all this stuff and my abilities, and, you know, having premonitions or feeling, hearing, and seeing stuff all around the spectrum of having, medium abilities. But no, I really didn't have, like, premonitions, but there was just a couple little omens that happened. Like, you know, I wrote about it in my book, my first book, Shadow Chaser. Like, when I was young, I think I was about 8 years old or something like that. We had a house out in Long Island, and I was running home from a friend's house, and they had this tall dead grass in between the houses, and I'm running in between the houses to get back to my house, and I saw in the corner of my eye this like book in the floor, and I picked it up, and it was a satanic book. It was burnt on the edges, and I remember having this really creepy feeling and threw it down, and I ran home and was crying to my mother. but it's just one of those things I look back, or it was an omen to me. Another one was actually pretty unsettling and creepy, but a calling involving of like me being in the work, is that's what we call it, you know, being involved in demonology and helping people from that taboo corner of the paranormal when it comes to the demonic, of genuine cases of it. 3 years before I got involved in the paranormal, there was a girlfriend of mine who came to my house where I was living at the time with roommates, and she pulled up to the house. She never told me this story until she started seeing me post on paranormal stuff on Facebook, because she thought I would have thought she was crazy. But once she started seeing I was doing stuff in the paranormal, she felt compelled to tell me the story. So she pulled up to the house and she saw this black hooded thing staring into the window of my place, and turned its head and had black eyes, and it just disappeared. She said it was the most terrifying thing she's ever seen. She finally decided to tell me that what she saw. And now looking back, it's just like some of these dark entities knew that I was going to be involved in the work. And they were watching me from the outside before I actually started getting involved.
Wow. I got a story kind of like that. I remember I was coming home from my girlfriend's house at the time, and I drove by this house that had like a bunch of Christmas decorations out. This was middle of December, and in the middle of it standing was a cloaked figure, and I was thinking, why would someone put a Grim Reaper out in the middle of a Christmas decorations? Like, they left a Halloween decoration up. Get home the next day, my grandfather passed away. So
that's how it goes, man. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I reiterate so many times, there's no conception of time in the spiritual realm. So synchronicities are so rampant when it comes to the spiritual realm, because things just line up perfectly. That's why there really are no coincidences. Things just happen, and if you pay attention, you'll connect the dots and they'll start to appear themselves to you, where you'll actually take notice to them and try to make sense of them and have the best chance to do so.
So I know you're into like music. You have CDs out and stuff. You're a recording artist. How does the paranormal influence your songwriting?
Well, I mean, music was my first passion. I mean, I started playing guitar when I was a teenager, I think I was 13, 14 years old. I only took three guitar lessons, and I taught myself from my ear. That's pretty good. I always wrote pretty deep lyrics. I never really thought, I'm like, where did I come up with some of this stuff? It's, you know, I feel like it's spiritually connected. I feel like music and spirituality go hand in hand so strongly and profoundly. But yes, I mean, once I got involved in the paranormal, it just fed into that and just decorated it even further with, you know, some of these amazing surreal experiences that I've gone through spiritually. So it just took it to another level with more, material to be able to write when it comes to some of the stuff that was, astounding for me to understand all these things that I've went through when it comes to the paranormal. But definitely, definitely, absolutely a connection between the two.
So when you watch these shows on TV and you hear people calling out demons pretty much everywhere they go, as a demonologist, what goes through your mind when you hear something like that?
Well, I mean, it's TV. You don't know what's going on. There's a lot of things that, you know, it's easy to judge and not know what's going on. I use myself as a piece of equipment, not just, the scientific equipment or what I've been taught. I use it as a kind of an incorporated element or tool to figure out what we're dealing with. And dealing with something demonic is obviously a little bit more rare than dealing with typical hauntings. Most of these hauntings are human spirits, and they can act deviantly and play games and try to make you feel like there's something more evil than they actually are, because they're trying to get negative energy from you, and they'll try to induce fear with you, because that's the type of energy they're exuding as a consciousness. They're at a lower vibrational frequency. So they're trying to get that same type of energy from that type of entity. So they'll play games and say things like Satan and stuff like that, just to get an emotional response out of you, to get that fear or emotion from you. But there's certain characteristics that you would look for when it comes to demonic haunting. But there's also another thing. I mean, people that are very, by the book, Bible and things like that, that some of these people believe that there are no ghosts, that they're all demons. So I don't know if that's incorporated, that belief system on a certain show, but I mean, when you're on TV, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, people want it to be scarier than it really is, to say it's, when you say demons, it's the taboo corner of the paranormal. That's actually what fascinated me. It drew me to the dark stuff, 'cause I was experiencing things of that nature But when I started reading books on it, you know, that's the most interesting part, because true demonic hauntings manifest in the most extreme manner. The craziest activity that can take place is with what they can do, moving extremely heavy objects, apports, taking physical items and going in and out of dimensions, you know, making people possessed and you know, being able to, like, you know, lift up four or five people that are trying to hold the person down, or levitations and all this stuff. So that obviously is the most interesting, fascinating part, because it's the most extreme. So obviously people from a viewing pleasure of being scared and wanting to watch things, that's probably why some of that thing, some, you know, that happens a lot. But I mean, these things do happen, but not as often as you would think. But it just depends. You know, what you're watching, and you make the judgment yourself. I mean, it's, you know, I always tell people all the time, I mean, you know, firsthand experience is the best way. I mean, to really understand or, you know, really take in whether or not it's paranormal or not, or if it's a ghost or a demon, so you can make your assumption. Because if you're not there, it's easy to assume, like, okay, they're faking something, or if they're doing something. Like, I just do what I want to do. Like, I do it how I want to do it. I just present it that way, and then people can make that assessment. But yeah, when you have TV shows, it's very easy for people to pick you apart, and they have editing that goes down that, you know, a lot of us don't have control of. We just do what we do, and then how they want to portray it on these shows is something, you know, how it all connects with the story. But yeah, I mean, I see from the paranormal community perspective, it's frustrating to see, like, everything's a demon and things like that. And, you know, you just have to choose what you believe in, what you enjoy, what's entertaining to you. But I think, you know, something that you can learn from too. I mean, these paranormal experiences are a humbling experience to be able to have, but to be able to actually learn from it, not just be scared, is a good part. A core element, I think, that, you know, should be more presented on some of these shows.
So what would you say is the most difficult part of about being a demonologist or getting into that kind of field?
Well, number one, I would say it's very hard not to be emotionally, getting emotionally involved with some of the people that come to you for help. Because if you do, the demonic can actually use it against you. And you kind of have to create a line. Because if you get too emotionally involved, you can start making decisions that may not help them, where you can actually not be objective, and you actually are almost like a family member to these people. Because on some of these cases, you get so, you know, friendly with these people, and you're trying to help them on such a deep level that you start feeling, you know, emotions and sympathetic for what they're going through. And these evil spirits can use that as a ploy to, in some sort of dark manner, from the shadows they're coming at you. That's number one. Number two, I would say, you know, people who have ulterior motives, who are, you know, they want attention. Their main objective is getting attention from a materialistic manner, and you can actually go to the house and you could turn that house into a freaking church and it wouldn't matter, because she or he doesn't have the intent to get rid of what they are supposed to. If their intent is to get attention, these evil spirits know that, and it can actually put us in danger, because these things know in the end they're going to win the battle, and they can actually come after us and mock us and mess with us in ways because of that. I'd say those are the two worst parts.
How did you get involved with the Demon Files?
So I was doing a podcast, The Darker Side of the Paranormal, and, you know, obviously, like yourself, you look for guests online to get someone interesting on to discuss some of their experiences or their work, you know, whether it be haunted locations, they're demonologists, they're, you know, psychically aware, whatever it may be. And obviously I was very interested in demonology. I read books on it. I read Ralph's book, The Demonologist. I read Ed Lorraine Warren's book, John Zappa's book. And to bring someone like that, I didn't know who Ralph was, and I knew that he had a movie coming out, Delivers from Evil, that was based on his original book called Beware the Night. And I added him on Facebook, messaged him, and he ended up calling me. I was on the phone with him for like 2 hours, getting to a really deep spiritual, talk. And he invited me to come out on some cases, and I said, absolutely. I mean, he lives here in New York. So, I mean, I jumped on that to be able to learn from someone who was around and learning his history. I mean, he started out working with Ed and Lorraine Warren, and then he was mentored by Bishop McKenna and Father Malachi Martin, who are probably the most respected exorcists of our time when it comes to the pioneering time periods of the paranormal. From doing some cases with him, then he, talked about the documentary series that he was offered and asked if he would be interested in being part of that, and that's really how it happened.
So, what was it like to be on your first TV show, and what did you learn from it that you put into your second TV show, The Ghost Loop?
Well, it's a different ball game. That was Ralph's show. I was so humbled to be there. To be a part of something with someone like that, again, who has, just an astounding reputation and who he's worked with and what he's done, accomplished in his career when it comes to being a part of the paranormal field and being a demonologist and helping so many people. Obviously, it's a little hectic and crazy with camera guys everywhere. I just wanted to be able to, be a good investigator for him. And try to present anything I could that would be substantial to help the case, help the family, and kind of corroborate what they were experiencing and confirm it, and also bring solidifying answers so we would, have the ultimate decision whether or not we would do an exorcism on the home, which is something, that Ralph told me how to do. I started to feel natural of it. It was only 3 episodes, but, the more we were doing it, I learned from it. It's definitely a learning experience. It definitely helped in certain manners, filming this new show. It's a different concept a little bit. Everything's a learning experience. But again, just being able to do what you do, I just want to be able to present that. I've been live broadcasting on Periscope for about 4 or 5 years. I pretty much live broadcast most of my investigations, even the residentials, that when the people are comfortable with it, just to present what goes on and the types of things that can happen, showing that, everything's doesn't have to be negative and scary and stuff like that. There's a good part to things, and helping the spirits, which is another element I really wanted to push for on this show, Ghost Loop, is to show that next level of respect to some of these spirits that are stuck, offering them prayer and sending them into the light, and showing evidence of it. I wouldn't want to just sit there and say, okay, I'm crossing over spirit. I wanted to show evidence of it, because that's what I've been doing on my Periscope for many years, and people watching. I leave the spirit box on while I pray, and it's astounding some of the responses that I get while I pray, and I've had many people witness this. And again, I wanted to be able to show that as a part of an element to be unique on the show, which is definitely was able to do so on a bunch of the episodes. Everything's a learning experience, and humbled to be able to be a part of a project, to have the chance and opportunity to try and help people on a wider spectrum and reach families that I would have never been able to reach, because we don't charge for this sort of thing, and be able to, be funded to reach these people and bring spiritual awareness, to kind of present, what we do and what I do, and in a positive manner. Obviously people want to be entertained, but I want to have substance behind it so people can actually learn at the same time, to protect themselves, to learn how to avoid spiritual collisions from dark entities and keep themselves and the people they care about safe.
Yeah. You're talking about how, we don't charge for, paranormal investigations. I had a friend of mine tell me that she had someone come over to cleanse her house, and she charged her like $125 to come over there and cleanse her house. I'm like, wait, she charged you money to cleanse her house? She's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, don't do that.
Well, there's no guarantee whatever we do gets rid of it. It's not like
exactly.
We're coming in with like a vacuum and like a Windex and be like,
yeah,
okay, it's gone. It's definitely gone. Like, it's not just what we do. It's also the lifestyle of the individuals we come in contact with, because, mm-hmm. you know, what they do can actually invite it right back in. And then you just keep going back there. You can't charge these people for this sort of yeah. thing, because it's very speculative of what we're doing. We have the intent, which is the most important thing. You have to have the genuine intent, willingness to help these people. And they have to have the intent, the willingness to do whatever it takes in the back of their mm-hmm. mind, subconsciously and outwardly, willing to do whatever it takes to get rid of what's in their home. Because if they don't, telepathically, these negative spirits know that, and they will use it against you and myself and whoever goes into these cases. And that's the dangerous elements. What you deal with a lot, I think, in modern day is that people realize that Hollywood and the paranormal is mixed. It's people know that there's TV shows, and, you know, sometimes people, you know, want attention. And it's a mm-hmm. you know, you got to be able to learn through that and try to bypass that. But again, all we can do is try to help these people and have that intent to do so.
Now, you were talking about using Periscope and to for your investigations to help spread the word about the paranormal. Do you think like the use of social media has led to like a spiritual awakening of sorts, where people feel more comfortable to talk about paranormal, and actually more paranormal stuff may be happening because of that?
Well, I think, number one, acknowledgement is such a prevalent thing when it comes to spiritual energies. If there's all these human spirits are looking for acknowledgement, that connection with some of us that are alive in a physical plane on Earth, if they know that we can pick up on their feelings or hear them or see them, they feel like they're alive again. They're desperate to thrive from that connection, to feel like they're breathing in a physical body again. So when people start thinking about the paranormal, it can awaken and attract things to them when they go places and stuff like that. So the more that is possible from a broad, huge spectrum. So it's definitely, that's definitely possibly a factor.
So two-part questions. The first part, why do you think the demon files never really caught on? And second part, how did you get involved in Ghost Loop?
Okay. I don't know. I guess they just decided not to do the show for whatever the reason. Obviously, Destination America is a smaller network and it's a smaller audience, so it's a little trickier to have something that would be going further. I really don't know. That I don't know of, but the Ghost Loop thing was a concept that was created by, Essential Media and Eric and myself. I've been bringing Eric on investigations for about 2 years now. I knew he was passionate about the subject, and they had actually discovered Matt and Caliph, and Kristen had actually investigated with us once or twice, and it all kind of came from there.
What has been like your top five locations that you've been to?
They just actually knocked down this place that was so messed up. This place in Indiana was called Revenant Acres. I wrote about it in my book. It was so dark and so crazy that we actually ended up having to leave the investigation because it literally was trying to possess us. The whole house shook. It was just really seriously nuts. No one really knew the history of the place. It was a farmhouse. My friend couldn't even hold the spirit box because he felt the energy, and he handed it to me. And I literally felt like pins and needles on half of my body. And I knew how powerful this thing is. And there's a video on YouTube of someone being possessed at this place, and he was contorting his arm. And I could look at the video and knew that it was legit. It was not made up. This guy's eyes were dilating. He was drooling and saying creepy things. And someone else had allegedly been possessed there. And feeling this thing right away, I was like, that's it. I'm putting holy water on. And we all go in the kitchen. I put holy water on. And Dave Spinks and David Weatherland, who were with me, they're putting holy water on. And I'm mm-hmm. as they're doing, I look to the right in this room that was adjacent to the kitchen, this dark room, and I saw this white face with black eyes with terrible teeth. I mean, literally what it looked like was that scary face that flashes in the movie The Exorcist. And all of a sudden I freak out, I yell to them, and Dave's running through the house throwing holy water all around. We started to smell this like putrid, like manure type smell out of nowhere. And he didn't even know he was recording his pocket, and there's EVPs. He played it and said, you know, you better pray it burns. And, you know, then we went upstairs and started investigating further. And I just felt this thing trying to get inside me. I felt pins and needles on the half of my body. And I just said, in the name of Jesus Christ, back off. And literally, as if like a truck hit the entire house, the whole house shook. And we were live streaming during this happened. Everyone like witnessed it. And we just turned off all of our equipment. And we just looked at each other in shock, like, are you serious? And then we just hear like these tapping, come someone running up the stairs. And then all of a sudden you hear this, all this like whispering. We were just like, we're just poking this thing at this, you know, at this point. Like, we really felt like if we push this any further, someone's, you know, going to get hurt. So we actually left. And, you know, that was one of those things that stuck with me for a little while. It was referencing, because there was this thing that would say, I am seven. At the place, and for months afterwards, everywhere I was investigating, it was saying that through the spirit box. And you know, these are some of the most fascinating places for me when the stuff sticks with you for a little while. And dude, hey, Cabin on 360 is right up there too. I mean, what I had experienced there, which I'm writing about in my second book as well, because I thought that was really interesting, really crazy. It's just an example of how a demonic entity can actually form into your worst fear. And yeah, I hate spiders.
So would you say on record, do you think that the whatever is downstairs is demonic, or is it just we're not sure yet?
Which part?
In the basement.
Well, I'll tell you right now, there's no human spirit can actually take the form of something that's not in itself. I mean, it could be a mist, mm-hmm. It could be a ball of energy, but not something. I've never to this day on the SLS have I ever seen something actually form into something that was animal like that. I mean, literally the legs were bent backwards. It looks exactly like a spider, and it was exactly where the original spider I saw in the basement where we killed it. I'm like, I told Dennis, I'm not coming down this basement in the pitch dark knowing that thing's there, and it was pretty big. And I haven't, you know, the footage that Dave has while this was happening, this, like, I don't know if it's like the size of like a grapefruit, this ball of energy comes down from the ceiling, floats over my shoulder for a few seconds and goes back up through the ceiling right as this was happening. You know, and Dave actually got hit in his gut and he was heaving outside the cabin. It was just pretty astounding stuff that was going on there, considering all the stuff that you guys told us and the evidence that you guys had gotten prior. I even went home. When I got home, there's a huge spider dropping down in the moment I bet. I'm like, the chances of that. And then you send me that picture a few weeks later of worst nightmare ever. The spider that was the size of a dinner plate telling me, yeah, this guy, you've never seen this guy down here. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. That's that place is really interesting too. I mean, I know I told you guys I felt like it was like you know, the trifecta of the paranormal. I mean,
and we need to get you to come back here soon.
Yeah, we are definitely coming back soon. Definitely, I can't wait. I might have to wear a hazmat suit in that basement, but
exactly. Dressed up like those guys in E.T. with the hazmat suit. We had a team come down from New Hampshire. They rented the house for the weekend. You know, spent $400, drove however long it takes to get from New Hampshire to here, and stayed there for approximately 45 minutes and left. And said the house is too much. We're leaving.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's
it's
crazy.
Still going strong. Yeah, man, it's been pretty intense out here. Have you really been like genuinely scared during investigation?
Well, that place that I was just telling you about, the Revenant Acres, like I've never left an investigation because it was so creepy. But just knowing that people were possessed and feeling like the pins and needles in half of my body, like this thing was legit powerful. To be able to shake the house and to feel that on my body to try to get inside me. I, you know, so it's, That was something that I've never dealt with. You can get startled, but most importantly, in the beginning, I felt overwhelmed with some of the experiences and creeped out, but my faith is so strong. I could be startled in a dark room, but I will lay down the law when it comes to my faith immediately. Because if you truly believe in the, you know, God's more powerful than any evil spirit, then, you know, these things can't idealistically do to you what they want to do to you. So I might be startled. Something creepy might happen, but I will literally try to protect myself immediately with that faith. So they can try to scare me, and use some of these tactics that they do, but ultimately they won't get it from me. I've been oppressed by an evil spirit. I've been to that dark place psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually, but that made me stronger to where I am today in this present day, and I will never be there again. So they can do their little tactics, but it will not get to me where I've been before and what they do to people. That's how I'm able to relate to some of these people on these cases who are being oppressed, to say, I've been there. I've been in those dark moments, and this is what they're doing. You have to be objective about your emotions from a third-person perspective, because if they don't add up, you got to take a step back and try to situate yourself and realize, wait a minute, something is trying to amplify a negative emotion within me, whether it be sadness, aggression, or depression, whatever it may be, that's, you know, making you become in that manner.
So can you describe what it feels like to be oppressed by an evil spirit?
So, I mean, being oppressed, I mean, you know, I'd actually come back from Bobby Mackey's. I wrote about it in my book. I was coerced to play with the Ouija board, and, you know, it followed me home, and I went through this like couple of weeks where I would comfortably say that it was the most painful experience I've ever gone through. I was waking up like 5 o'clock in the morning, going up and down the stairs, feeling like I was being stabbed all around my body. I would drive my car, and I'd literally have to pull over and get out of the car because I felt like I was being burned buried alive. I was going to the cemetery by myself, sitting there in the dark and just recording audio, and I was smelling rotting flesh and hearing these voices saying, hail to this demon, hail to that demon. It was so painful. I would never want to kill myself, but the thoughts were literally just, you know, passing through my head constantly, like, you should just kill yourself. I could never do it. I had to drink beers just to make some of this pain subside. But I realized one night that, you know, I have to figure out, I read about grounding yourself. I did this white light of Jesus Christ around me, a visualization, this grounding thing. And immediately I almost felt 100% better, and I saw this red glowing ball fly out of me and fly right through the window. And I said to myself, wow, they got me. They really messed with me. Within the next day or two, I was back to normal, as if nothing happened to me. And, you know, it awakened me. It made me stronger. And I know that God let me go through that to have a deeper understanding of what occurred so I can help people in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if people understand quite how powerful their mind is when it comes to stuff like that. If you can visualize, like you said, you visualize the white light of Jesus, and it helped get the ball, helped get the negative energy out of you. I think a lot of people, I'm not sure a lot of people understand, like, how powerful you really are if you put your mind to it.
Yeah, and, you know, when I was going through a spiritual awakening, I was actually terrified that something was actually making me feel like I was psychic. That, because I was reading books and saying when you become possessed, you can actually become psychic, and they're predicting stuff and knowing information they could have known. And I never thought that I'd be psychic in the middle of my life. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember this hooded thing came to me in my bed, choking me, saying, you know, the transformation. But like, I knew what it was doing. Now I know what it was doing. It was knowing I was going through that period where I didn't understand what was happening to me, and it was trying to take advantage of that moment to induce fear within me, because I was, that transformation reference was I'm being spiritually awakened. I'm starting to notice these things, I'm seeing them, I'm experiencing them in all different aspects, and this thing wanted to come at me and get a little energy from me. But you know, that's just how it goes, and I've progressed so much from that moment you know, to where I am today.
So before you go on an investigation, how do you get yourself ready for like what you're about to do? Do you say a prayer of protection? Do you have like stones? How do you prepare for an investigation?
Well, I wear a blessed St. Michael pendant around my neck. It's been blessed by the relic of the true cross that Jesus was crucified on, that Ralph has some piece of. Anything it touches considered a third class relic. And everywhere, almost everywhere I go, my pendant is referenced. It was on the show, whether they show it or not. You know, on my live investigations for years, he constantly talks about my pendant. I mean, I have so many witnesses to it, and they talk about, you know, St. Michael protecting me. So it just brings validity to who, I mean, I pray to St. Michael every single day. It's, I mean, one of the protection prayers I say. I'll say a certain prayer before leaving location. I mean, I'll say I revoke the permission for any evil spirits to follow me home or to attack me after I leave this location in the name and authority of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, in the name of the Blessed Mother, Virgin Mary, Mother of God, in the name of all the angels and saints and the blessed apostles, Peter and Paul. I cover my heart, mind, body, and soul with the blood of Jesus Christ, and I fear no evil. Amen. And I will throw holy water around my car and myself or whatever and so forth.
Yeah, well, yeah. What advice would you give someone who wants to get into the paranormal field?
I think it would be really important to read some informative books where you can kind of formulate, some knowledge for yourself about the different types of scenarios that can take place, especially the ones that you can walk into that can be dark and risky for you to mm-hmm. get involved with, because we do take risks as investigators. Even myself, things can happen. Things do happen. Even as protected as I am with my faith, things come at me. Things try to frighten me. They target me, because once you step in the way of evil, or, you know, you're always a target for the rest of your life. Or if you walk into some of these dark places and you don't have a strong faith foundation or of spirituality, these things can sense it on you. They can see it around your aura and they'll target you. So you have to prepare yourself to be in one of those worst case scenarios, just in case it does happen to you. That would be the best advice, because it's not about Hollywood movies, things thrown around the room or getting scratched or things like that. Like we were just discussing before, it's the psychological breakdown of a person that they can do. They can amplify any sort of negative emotion a human being can have to the point where they would want to ultimately hurt themselves or hurt someone that they care about around them. And they can wait dormantly years, decades. If you invite it in through magic or playing, like, you know, with a Ouija board. I mean, I know people that play with Ouija boards, but to me, I think of the Ouija board as spiritual Russian roulette. You can play with it one time, 100 times, but that one moment might be the worst mistake of your life. And now, is that really worth it? And, you know, and I've seen cases of people that have played Ouija boards like 20, 30 years ago, and all of a sudden they're starting to have activity in their home, and then you're getting responses and impressions of having to do with the Ouija board. And then a hooded thing trying to tell their 12-year-old son to go and cut himself because they don't want you to notice anything has to do with the paranormal. They can sit, again, in a perspective of no conception of time, patiently until you have no clue you've done something, and you start trying to rationalize things, and it's going to take advantage of that until you finally, you know, come to that conclusion what's taking place.
Wow, that's scary for some people, because I know, a lot, I know Ouija boards were popular as toys, you know. Maybe by Parker Brothers, I'm sure a lot of people have, played with Ouija boards at slumber parties when they were kids. You know, not thinking about it. And then what do you think, 20 some odd years later, or however long it takes, something will show up. That'd probably worry me, because I know I played with a Ouija board when I was a kid. Of course, I'd ask stupid questions.
Yeah.
Like, who was the coolest person in the room, and then try to spell my name, just kind of goofing around, but it's some serious stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the risks, the risks are there. And I've seen it. I've seen it many times, quite a few times. It just matters if you actually invited something, because these things are looking for invitation into our lives. I call it spiritual rules of engagement. That's what these things are looking for. Those opportunities to have permission to be around us, target people around us, to create these chaotic environments to break us down and make an example out of us and show God that God shouldn't have created man when it comes to a true demonic entity.
Well, Sean, I definitely appreciate you coming on and talking with me tonight. You'll be able to make it out back to Mechanicsville here pretty soon.
Oh, and it's going to be soon, man. I just talked to Dave the other day. Yep.
Perfect. You want to give people, let people know where they can find you and where what time Ghost Loop's on TV and
yeah,
how they can watch it?
Absolutely. You can go to my website. It has a link to all of my social media. It's SeanDAustin.com, S-E-A-N, D as in David, A-U-S-T-I-N.com. I'm selling signed books of my first published book, Shadow Chaser, about my first step into the paranormal. I'm working on my second book currently. Also, my music, I'm selling signed CDs. I mail out only into the U.S., and you can get my book, Shadow Chaser, and my music on Amazon and iTunes and stuff like that. And Ghost Loop airs Friday nights, 10 p.m., 9 central on Travel Channel, and our fourth episode airs this coming Friday.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking with me tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time out to join me, and I will definitely
absolutely, man.
Checking out your webpage and maybe getting a signed book here soon.
Nice, man.
All right, brother. You have a good one.
All right, Ryan. Have a good, great night.
All right, you too.
Later, buddy.
All right, man. Take care. Well, that was fun. Definitely appreciate Sean coming on the show and speaking with me tonight. Guess who I have here to say goodnight?
I don't know if I should say hello or goodbye.
I think we should say both.
Hello, goodbye.
Angie has just joined me. She's about to leave to go to work. So next week we have a paranormal team from Nebraska coming on. And looking forward to talking to them. So I really do not know much about Nebraska. So that should be fun. So thanks again for 6 great years. And it sounds like I was taking a piss. I'm in the men's room or something, but that's Angie filling up her water bottle. So, all right, guys. Hope you have a great night, and I'll talk to you next week. Same freaking awesome time, same.
Freaking awesome channel.
Bye.